today. Welcome to our CMD Bite Size series. In these podcasts, we will be exploring a range of ministry and theological issues. Today I'm joined by Dr. Mike Kent. Welcome, Mike, and thank you for giving up your time to join me today. Mike has had a varied career. He is a marine biologist, but was also a teacher, and before taking early retirement, head of the Centre for Applied Zoology at Cornwall College, Newquay. So, Mike, currently you carry out independent research into movement ecology of marine mollusks and are a freelance writer of mainly science books. That sounds like quite a lot to fill your time. What has drawn you to this area of work?
I've not had any great revolutionary experience. I've not had any Damascene experience. People have, and I respect that greatly. But my journey is a different one, and I think God leads us from where we are. And I've had the gift of not having certainty, and my lack of certainty has been a gift that I can share with other people, because it means that I can have dialogue with people who are searching themselves. So how it affected my work, it affected my work as a teacher. I was a biologist at St. Austell's Sixth Form College. I was also one of the senior tutors. So and this was way back now, St. Austell College, no longer St. Austell's Sixth Form College, I should say, no longer exists. But we had to share the assemblies. In those days, even at Sixth Form, assemblies were legally required. You could, just an assembly, and had to have some religious content. So I would take them, but it wasn't to proselytize. It was really just to open people's minds. So I used to take general studies when we talk about faith and science. And again, my bottom line as a teacher is I try not to fill people with facts. You've got to do that for exams. But the thing that I really like doing is trying to get them to think for themselves critically.
Yeah, and that's so encouraging, your story, because I've been speaking to a number of people recently who've expressed kind of anxiety, I guess, that actually they don't have a Damascene moment faith story. And actually to hear from other people that don't feel that they've had that particular moment but feel that they've been on a journey is really encouraging to lots of people, because often it's those wow moments that we hear about and not the kind of everyday and the working from where you are. So I think that's a really powerful concept of actually God being where you are. And then what's the next step for you? What does that look like and how do you work?
I've given talks. I mean, it's part of what I do. I have a ministry with a small M. I don't pretend to be a religious figure, and you know I'm as flawed as anyone else. But part of my journey, part of my role, because I all think we all have a purpose, and one of my purposes, if you like, is to spread the word that people of faith can do science, and scientists can be people of faith. Whether or not it's Christian faith or other faith, that's another question. But of course, I'm a Christian because I did following Ray. I didn't join the church for the doctrine. I could have been a Greek Orthodox like my mother. I should have been, really, or Church of England or Catholic or anything. I joined to follow Jesus. Simple. It sounds simple, but it's what the disciples did. I was not asked, Ray, of course I accept the Nicene Creed, and I accept it as part of the church, and we could have a whole discussion on that, but I think that's a deeper level. I came to follow Jesus and to be a service, to follow in the way that he did things. And part of the things that I do, as I say, is to talk to people, open their minds, and part of my journey is just to get them to ask questions.
Yeah, and that's more important than ever at the moment, I think, with the kind of extreme narratives we're facing in politics and the news. Actually, people just getting people to wonder, what if that story was different? What if you saw it from a different perspective? What if a different person's voice was in there? It is a really powerful thing. A really critical thing, actually, for everybody to be able to do. So I understand that you have an event coming up celebrating the Feast of St. Francis.
Yes.
Can you explain a bit about the Franciscans for anyone that might not know?
You'll have to come to the event to actually find out more, of course. No. But no, the Franciscans, I think I had probably the same knowledge of Franciscans as most people. Saint Francis was an amazing figure and loved animals. And I knew about St. Francis Day or the Feast of Francis, St. Francis a little bit. I knew very little about his life. I knew very little about his theology. He was kind to animals and kind to people. It's very interesting because he is probably one of the most revolutionary saints, most radical saints that you would ever find. So St. Francis himself was, and this should relate to most people, it would have related to me as a teenager, he was a rather wayward young man who had a lot of money. He had his father's money and he spent it. And he spent it not necessarily wisely, but he spent it. And his father wanted him to go off to war. He went off to war and he was a failure. He was imprisoned and he came back a broken man. And he had an experience, you'd have to read all about this, an experience in a cave, and he realised that he was not following the right way. And he followed a way which is followed now by Franciscans. He embraced poverty. But he embraced poverty at a time when the church was extremely rich. I mean, really rich in those terms, in medieval terms. So it went against the trend. And he was accused of heresy, being a heretic by many people. But he got, because he wanted to serve people like Jesus serves people, he wanted to go without any money. He wanted to go, and he was an itinerant, which means that he wouldn't be in a monastery either, which went against the trend. So they're still of this thing. He's an itinerant and moved around, and his embracing of poverty, his service of people was paramount. Absolutely paramount to his life. And that's the way that the Franciscans work now. And there is Richard Rohr, as some people will know, is a great writer. He's a contemplative priest. He talks about the third way that the Franciscans have. Mm-hmm. There's the Orthodox Church. There's the heretic people who are against the Orthodox. And he talks about a third way, which is the heterodox. And that's the Franciscan way. What was interesting was that the Pope at the time accepted the Franciscans and accepted the Brotherhood of the Franciscans because already thousands of people were following the St. Francis's way. An amazing story, really. And Scorsese has done a brilliant small short film on St. Francis.
Okay, so it's worth watching the film and reading up a bit more about it. So do you think there are things that we can learn from the Franciscan order today that you relate to our lives today?
Yes, I mean, I'm going to be talking about this at the event. And I'm not a Franciscan, but I was fortunate enough to get in touch with a Franciscan friar, a priest now, who's a biochemist, a scientist as well. And I think that what Franciscans nowadays try to do is get the balance between, when we're dealing with environmental stewardship, get the balance between care for people and care for animals, care for wildlife and care for the countryside. And the focus is on the importance of people and fraternity. Franciscans is a brotherhood, a fraternity. So the first priority is with people and looking at St. Francis's life, you see that he sees animals and plants, even the sun. The canticle of Brother's Sun is what I'll be talking about as well. Even the sun has a relationship with us. So the Franciscans, if you want to find one word to encapsulate what Franciscans are about, it's about relationships. What's interesting and something I'm going to be exploring on the Saturday event is how science and the Franciscan theology overlap so much, because science also shows us that most of our environment ecology is built on relationships. Most of the things in the universe, and this is a quantum thing, is built on relationships. And to be part, we're part of that relationship. Yes, yeah, so I'd just like to say, you know, just emphasise that point that that St. Francis is not a pantheist. He is, the ground of St. Francis's being is God, not nature. And he would be, and Franciscans would not understand the pantheist position.
Okay. And do you think that lands particularly well in Cornwall, considering the Celtic spirituality background, Celtic Christianity, with people living with those on the margins, living at the margins of empire, and also living in rhythm with nature?
Absolutely. I mean, we came to Cornwall. I'm a Cornishman. I mean, although my mother's Greek, I was born in Bugle. And the Celtic tradition is amazing. And of course, the interesting thing about the Celts, and the especially the Irish and Cornish Celts, very close link, as you'll know from Padstow, is that the Celtic Christians, although they were theoretically and a part of the Catholic Church, they were on the edges anyway. So they were out of control for many years. So they went their own way. And the monasteries that the Celts had in Cornwall were not permanent monasteries. They were often villages that were made of wood. And they were very much in tune with nature. Yeah, I would say. But it's having that understanding, the relationship between people and nature. And, of course, an understanding that we are made in the image of God, and God created, and we can talk, have no problem with that idea. God created through evolution, as far as I'm concerned, the great diversity of plants and animals, and he regarded them as good. And I again, I'm going to explore that word good, because there's a misunderstanding about it. There really is a misunderstanding what we mean by good because of suffering. So yes, I mean, I think that the Celtic tradition, and it's something that it's developed. You can read history books on Celtic. We've developed it, and it's become something slightly different. But nevertheless, it's been built on that past.
That same tradition. You're giving us lots of teasers for this event that we're going to want to know more and come along. So thinking about climate change now, climate change is a fundamental issue for everyone today. And I think for many people, probably myself included, sometimes the scale and enormity of that can feel overwhelming. Are there ways in which you think we can make a difference? So what do you think Christians particularly should be doing in terms of climate change?
We've got to be bold. We've got to endure. We've got to retain hope. We've got to fight against anxiety. Climate change anxiety is, I have it, for goodness sake. Anyone who looks out the door and sees the storms, you know, will have a bit of anxiety about it. I have anxiety because I'm not a climate change biologist myself. But a reader at St. German's Church, Dr. Matt Frost, is head of the head of a marine climate change research group, a European group, and I talk to him. I've had lectures from him, so I've got pretty knowledgeable about it. So it's, if you look at projections, projections look quite scary, but don't forget they're projections, and those graphs can change if we make some effort. But how you address it, and I think that you try to do something. Matt would say, he was talking to a group at a tube station once, and it gave them a horror story, then he gave them some details, and we looked at fish, and he said, everyone can do something. We can do something. And as soon as you start doing something, you actually feel better. You feel as if you're contributing. One of the things he said was he promoted the use of sustainable fish, so that if you had sustainable fish, but not fishing them to depletion, managing their fishing, allowing fish populations to grow by choosing the right fish to eat yourself. A simple thing to do. And if you can do that, populations grow. And what the problem is at the moment, climate change is not a problem, except it's always happened, but it's happening at such a staggering rate. if we can even slow it down, more of our wildlife, more of the animals and plants which we depend on can move and evolve and adapt to the changing conditions. At the moment, it's happening so fast that they are unable to do so. So we will lose species, which in a utilitarian way, you know, they're useful to us, but that's not the only way.
Yeah. We lose that diversity, though, that you're talking about in the Franciscans. So do you think churches have a specific role in this?
Yes. I mean, one of the things you'll see that the subtitle of the talk is From Home Garden to Home Planet. And there's a reason for that. Again, I'll explain that on the day. But the home, the garden aspect is very important. It's got biblical connotations as well, of course, with Eden and the gardens of Babylon, all sorts of things. But I'm suggesting that gardens are somewhere that we can all actually contribute to climate change, can contribute to environmental stewardship. And even for people that are living in flats, in small houses, can have window boxes. I remember a great film called The Birdman of Alcatraz. I can't remember who was in that now, but I'll come back to me in a minute. But the prisoner in Alcatraz kept birds, and he would feed the birds. He'd started with one bird. And actually, he was acting in a very Franciscan way. Mm-hmm. But he was having an effect where he was with what he was connected with. You don't have to go out your way to be doing this. And I'm not an eco-activist. I'm compelled to be involved in environmental stewardship because there's a mandate for me to be compelled to do it. I want to do it anyway. And because I take such joy myself in the wildlife that I've been experiencing. So it's a responsibility.
Yeah, that's really key, because it comes kind of full circle to what you were saying at the beginning, but just where you were connected to becoming a Christian, where you were in your context, you're suggesting that actually our response to environmental and climate change should be actually in our context where we are, the steps that we can take right outside our front door. And that's really encouraging to everybody, I think, that there's something that everybody can do, there's some way that people can relate wherever they are.
The other thing that I would say is that the reason why I connect with nature is because I've had such wonderful experiences as a young man. I mean, I go on the beach at Porthpian all the time, and just the extraordinary beauty and joy that you get at seeing these fantastic, amazing creatures. But, you know, don't underestimate the power of that joy, because that's what empowers you to do other things. And, of course, as a Christian, when I'm praising my animals, and I have to mention my favourite animal, which is, Miriam will not forgive me if I don't say about my Oncidella celtica, the Celtic sea slug, which I study. When I praise that, it's a form of praising God as well. God said it was good. God created that. If an artist creates a picture and no one looks at it and no one gets any joy in it, it's not very good, is it? So part of what we do, don't underestimate the power of sharing joy. And I think that's very important.
Excellent. Thank you. So thank you for joining me. Before we finish off, is there any particular message that you'd like listeners to take away from today?
Come along to the event. No, it isn't that sort of event. It's a cafe style event. I think that listeners, I hope they get something from what we've been talking about, and I hope that it makes people think. It continuously makes me think.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you very much, and I hope the event goes really well for you. And thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to CMD Bite Size Podcasts, produced by the Diocese of Truro. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do follow and share. To listen to similar podcasts, please visit the Truro Diocese website. If there is a subject you would like us to include, please email us at ministry@truro-diocese.org.uk.